Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us. This the airing of this program is, what, the 15th of December? That means 10 shopping days, less than 10 shopping days less, because you better have your shopping done. Well, people, I guess, do shop on Christmas Eve, don't they?
I don't know, Scott.
Since my goal this Christmas season is to not go into any stores.
That is a...
Because I'm a giver. I'm selfless. I think of others as I'm saying that.
I'm just trying to, I'm just trying to make this thing as seamless and easy as possible for myself.
But that sounds really self-centered.
It's culturally interesting. It's really how the birth of Christ is celebrated.
Someone said, you know, the interesting thing is it's the most materialistic day of the year, and the day is celebrated for the probably the least materialistic person who's ever lived. I thought it's kind of an irony. But
anyway.
No, I think online shopping.
Yeah.
I found that they fib sometimes on the when it's going to be delivered by. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Because they want you to sell their, oh, yeah, it'll be delivered by this doesn't show. So I don't. So you got, in other words, you got to get your Christmas shop. Why are we talking about Christmas shopping? Because there's people out driving right now. There's some guy sitting in his car. At the mall, why his this is a very sexist comment, but excuse me anyway, while his wife is in there shopping.
Okay.
There's something about it. It's in my DNA that I don't like shopping.
You're over 50 and you...
I didn't like shopping when I was younger.
You're stereotype.
They've opened the Roseville Gallery, 15 years ago in the Sacramento region?
Yes.
A big mall. I told my wife it was my life goal to never go in there.
It's important to have goals.
What I said. You got to have goals. You got to start somewhere.
How's it going there?
Oh, I wasn't there the first year. It was her birthday. Yeah, heck yeah. What am I going to do? It's her birthday.
You're a good man.
I'm a great man.
Shopping.
Anyway, it's this Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We come here each week talking about financial matters. And whether you've got a financial advisor you work with today, we want you to consider us your financial advisors on the air. And we talk about a lot of retirement issues, but also many other financial matters as well.
And we take your phone calls at 888-2-HANSON, that's 888-242-6766. So if you have questions about your 401k or IRA or portfolio or college funding or paying down debt, mortgages, financially related questions, it's 888.
Yeah, don't give me your calls about
2-HANSON.
Stuck at the mall shopping.
Yes, because as much as, well, let's just face it, we don't really care.
I guess we're starting off on the right foot here, aren't we?
There we go.
It is. You know, we're kind of in the... It's this time of year where it's like, how serious we want to take things. We take our business really seriously, but, you know, it's this Saturday.
But it is the weekend.
Saturday weekend program.
And we're going to take your calls.
Yeah, if you'd like to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're starting out... We get quite a few calls from Denver, in large part because... Well, one we air on KOA out of Denver, a great partner of ours. A few years now out of Denver. We also have Hanson McLean has an office with a couple certified financial planners, great guys, great advisors. We also have female financial advisors, but not in
Denver.
Yeah, and we've got a main office, and then we have a few other meeting locations that meet with people throughout the Denver region. So we end up getting quite a few calls on the program from Denver, and we're going to start off in Denver with Joel. Joel, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys?
Awesome. How you doing, Joel?
Excellent. Thank you. From Denver. Quick question for you. I am 57, and my wife is 57, and we are looking to retire maybe around 62-ish. And my quick question is this. I have a mortgage on my residence, the mortgage is, let's just call it $100,000. The value of the house is roughly $600,000. So $500,000, just make it easy, $500,000 in equity and $100,000 mortgage. And there's still probably 22, 23 years left on the mortgage. But the mortgage interest rate fixed 30 years is 4.125.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of people say that when you retire, you should have your mortgage retired, paid off before you retire. But my question is this: if I have a 4.125 interest rate for the next 20-some years, and I'm hoping the market average is historically 7 to 10%, not this year maybe, but historically, doesn't it make more sense to just write out that mortgage at 4 point whatever and hope that
Maybe it makes sense for you to take more money out of your home. And right? So let's take the extreme of it. Maybe it makes sense for you to actually put as much debt on the home as possible and then play that game where you're actually borrowing at X and investing at Y.
And I think Pat's kind of putting an extreme here because the reason you have a $100,000 mortgage on your home is because you have I mean, that's just where you happen to be in life. It's not that you decided, I think I'm going to do better than 4.125 over the long term, so I'm going to take a mortgage.
So the question we would ask is, is your portfolio 100% equities, 100% stock?
Probably 80.
Okay. And is all of your money in IRAs or 401ks, or is any of it in after-tax?
I have some after-tax accounts as well. It's probably 50-50.
And will you have a pension at retirement?
No.
And what will the mortgage? What's the mortgage payment, excluding taxes and insurance?
Like $550.
And how much do you have in after-tax dollars invested right now?
After-tax dollars, probably $500,000.
Okay, and how much of that is in bonds? Is it 20% in bonds?
Yeah, tops.
Okay.
Okay. Look, I mean, if you, how did you react during the 10 years ago during the crisis?
Well, I was sort of mad, but I just bit my upper lip and just hung with it.
So here's what I would do. If you were sitting in our office, we would actually open up your portfolio and look at your portfolio to what bond or cash instruments that you had in your portfolio that were paying interest of less than 4.125%.
Yeah, but let's assume that. But let's following Pat's argument on that. Let's say you have $1 million in savings, 200 roughly. You said 20% bonds. You had 200,000 in fixed income. So you said, all right, let's take 100 of that 2,000 to pay off the mortgage. Now he has a portfolio of what, 92% in stock.
That's correct.
Which is even more volatile than what he's got today.
Understand,
which could have an. From a behavioral finance perspective, it could actually impact a decision he makes down the road during the next major downturn.
But let's say he's got Jenny Mays in his portfolio, Scott, that are yielding 3%.
Here's the thing, Joel. We can make arguments on both sides. This is not a big deal in your situation, right? You've got $1 million in savings. You got $500,000 in home equity. You have a $100,000 mortgage. It's not whether you pay it off or not pay it off is going to have no impact on your retirement life. Would you agree with that?
Fair enough. That is fair enough. But
you wouldn't have it.
Yeah. Yes. I would look in the portfolio and say, look, Joel, you've got X, Y, and Z that are yielding less than, paying less than interest of less than 4.125%. And you've got stuff in there that's yield, that the yield on it, interest payments on it are 2%. And it makes sense financially just to pay the thing off, or better yet, just accelerate the payments over the next 5 years so that it's completely paid off and don't then leave the portfolio alone.
Well, that would probably be the best solution. If you've got 5 years to go, you're both working. I'm assuming you don't have any kids that you're paying out for still?
Correct.
Do you have any parents that you're paying for?
No.
Okay, so you're probably at peak earning years. You're both still working. I mean, if you could pay the thing off between now and retirement, assuming you're maximizing your 401k, that would probably be your best bet financially. Because then you hit retirement, you haven't touched your portfolio, and you don't have a mortgage payment. And as Pat likes to say, as someone approached me in the gym this week, walked up to me and said, hey, I really like your partner's line. Money not going out is the same as
money coming in.
Yeah.
It's identical.
And quite frankly, it takes some risk psychologically. It actually lessens the burden if you have no house payment psychologically.
Right.
And I know you're 57 and you're working now, but when you're 65 or 67 and there's major market volatility,
when
which
you're retired,
there will be.
And you have time and you're no longer putting money into savings and you're now taking money out of savings, it is different.
It is much, much different. So I would just accelerate the payments. I'd re-amortize the loan over the next 5 years, figure out what the payments needed to be in order to have it paid off the date I retired. That would be my recommendation.
So you would lean towards, by the time I retired, to have it no mortgage?
Yes. I can just tell you.
Truly, to Pat's argument, if you want to go based upon statistical probabilities, then you would probably argue that the mortgage should be much greater than $100,000.
Yeah. If
based upon your argument that you believe you're going to earn greater than that, then why stop at $100,000?
Yeah. Why not take $400,000 out of the home and invest it?
Right.
Which is not what we're recommending.
No. But it's arguing the null hypothesis.
Right. Okay.
Either way, you're going to be fine, Joel. You're in a good position.
You're a good saver.
All right. I appreciate the insights. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Yeah. You know, someone came up to you at the gym and.
Yeah. He said, I really like that line.
Oh.
So that's Pat.
I'm going to have to start going to the gym more often.
And he's like, where's Pat? Oh, he's a. All right. If you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. That'll get you on the program. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, by the way, if you want to do it numerically, 888-242-6766. And let's continue on to Colorado with Tina. Tina, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Tina.
I have a question about divesting the part of my funds that is in an S&P index fund. And the reason is this. I took a bath on that and some Amazon that I invested in spring and then, unfortunately, October, respectively. With the volatility, three parameters that I'm trying to outweigh. Obviously, the Fed raising the interest rates, the China tariffs, and the retail sales. I've been waiting until the January earnings report, hoping that I can make up the loss from the retail sales being high post-holiday season with all the consumer sentiment. But I'm starting to wonder if it would be more prudent to cut the losses now before the Fed makes a decision about raising interest rates.
Tina, you said you bought both of these in the spring. Is that correct?
Well, actually, I bought the S&P index fund first week in October, Amazon in the spring.
Okay. And why did you buy these?
Just thinking that there was growth potential in both of them. And
What's your time horizon?
Where was the money before you bought these? Where did it come from? What was the source of the money? And what is your investment time horizon?
Well, I had divested in February when the market had started to drop, and the time horizon was to hold for a year. But with all the market volatility and the potential of the recession, again, nobody has a crystal ball, but certainly
Can I ask you this, Tina? What have you been reading or following to build
your investment thesis? Yeah, your thesis.
In terms of just the overall portfolio?
Yeah, and why? Why are you even paying attention to what's happening in China? In other words, why?
I can answer that question. Yeah. I have am overly invested, unfortunately, due to some the financial advice that I received after inheritance in annuities, and so because so much
sorry,
is in my
Tina.
Annuities, I know, and I'm also on disability, so it put me until those annuities kick in. 8-10 years respectively, I'm left with trying to live off this.
And I kind of
let's step back for a second then. How old are you?
I'm 58.
And you said you're on disability.
I thought you were about 28.
I know. I thought she was young. So
I know. I have a very young voice.
Yeah, I was 28.
I thought on the outside.
And that's why I'm like
your time horizon.
Okay. Yeah.
You sound really young. So
I know.
So these annuities, you said when they kick in 7 or 8 years, what does that mean?
8 to 10 years. It means in 8 to 10 years, I will be able to cover, you know, be fine with my cost of living and covering my expenses. Between now and then, I'm in a situation where if I did nothing in the market, I would squeak by, but then all my savings would be gone except for the asset in my house.
How much money do you have in annuities?
I have about $262,000, and I have $140,000 in stock.
Are they fixed annuities or variable annuities?
They're fixed, and they kick in, I think, like I said, 8 to 10 years, respectively. One's growing at one's at 6%, the other third's at 7%, the other third's at 10%. I won't bore you with the reason they're in different ones because of how the inheritance came through and some of my IRAs and the advice I got. But in general, there are three different annuities, 6%, 7% fixed,
When did you buy these annuities?
The ones that were 7% to be growing at 7% was in 2015.
Yeah.
When I got my inheritance in 2017 was an affixed theme. It's growing 10%.
The market offered a 10% guarantee for the next decade of the almost $4 billion that we manage, we would probably put 40% of it there. So maybe more than that.
So Tina, you need to go see a financial advisor.
You've got a bad one.
Because I
feel horrible.
Those annuities aren't doing what you think they're doing. And I'm just telling you, they're not paying 7% and 10%. It's just not. And that's why I asked when you bought them, because that would tell us what kind of yields they're getting. They might have had but bonuses on them where they paid it the first year, but they're not paying those. Unless you go to annuitize, and they're not going to get that. So what you need to do is you might be better off. Are you on Social Security disability?
Yes. Okay. And if I could just back up, I have seen a few financial advisors, and gratefully they have the same sensitivity as you. And I don't want to cry now, but I'm kind of in a situation. I am where I am.
I know.
But I'm told that, again, the two buckets of annuities are if I wait and don't take them out until
it probably makes the most sense that you keep them in there.
You may want to take a 10% withdrawal, Scott. There's probably a 10% free withdrawal on it.
Yes.
So
there is. You can take up to that per year. But what I've been told, if I don't touch them and let them grow at that second.
Yeah, they're equity index annuities.
Exactly. That first bucket, if I don't touch it, then it grows at that rate, and then that's the rate I can take out in 10 years. Otherwise, it's like 2%.
Here's a concern, this is exactly why I hate equity index annuities. This is exactly why I say the world would be better if these products never existed, because they are so misused, and here you're in this situation. What I would like to see, and I know Pat would agree, is, Tina, for you to be in a position where you're not worried about what the Fed's going to do, what China might do, what Amazon's earnings are going to be, that's noise. You should be able to have a portfolio where you don't even think about that stuff. And I'm reminded, I had a client who was widowed. It was actually a client of mine's daughter was widowed, and she ended up sticking with a stockbroker that her husband had. And her husband, I guess, liked doing a lot of trading. I don't think it helped him any, but that's what he liked to do. And I remember she came in and she was worried about, she said something about the jobs report on Friday, and she had two kids at home. And this poor lady had been widowed for a couple of years and was watching Fox Business and CNBC trying to, and I said, I am so sorry that you're in this position thinking that somehow
that your monitoring of the economy is going to somehow yield a better performance for you and a better lifestyle from your investments, when, if anything, it might be the inverse. So I think, Tina, what's important is that you get a strategy, put the strategy in place, and forget about it. So it sounds like maybe you've got to talk to a couple other advisors that also realize that these, you know, it sounds like you got good advice on, it's probably not best to try to cash these in now because of what the damage has been done. But I would think, Tina, I would think really to find, it sounds like you talked to a couple of people and I would perhaps trust one. The answer as far as what to do with Amazon, or do you wait until, we can't predict short-term swings, nor do we try to. That's just, that is not going to yield you the kind of results that you need. So I really think, as hard as this sounds, to maybe go back to one of those financial advisors you talk with, someone you trust, go on a fee basis, have them build a portfolio, and ignore it. Just go on with your life. It's like, what can I, how much money can I have on a monthly basis? Budget that and ignore the rest and move on. So, Tina, I again apologize for the position you're in, and we certainly wish you well. And Pat, I got to tell you, I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This could be my sister. She inherited some money. Probably didn't have a lot before. Maybe no background in this. Didn't know right from wrong.
Inheritance. They are. When she's talking, I'm thinking. When she said she inherited the money, I'm thinking that explains a lot.
Yeah, it's not her fault, right? That she didn't understand.
No, and a challenge often is. Look, there's something about making some investment mistakes, having some losses along the way, and learning. There's no education better than your own experience, right? And when you inherit money, if you've had not had those experiences, it's challenging.
Yes. Yeah, it's new. You don't know who to trust. You can't tell good from bad.
No. So.
It is. It's and you're right, Scott. I mean, talking about the losses, for the rest of the listeners, my son graduated from college last year, got a job, decent paying job, and starts trading penny stocks. And he's telling me about it, and all I can do is just laugh.
He's telling you.
Yeah. He's telling me about it, and I just laugh and laugh. And then he'll call and ask me for advice. And it's like, Dad, I'm thinking about trading this, and had I done this yesterday? I go, well, you didn't do it yesterday. You're thinking about doing it today.
Pat's thinking to herself, you know, I'm more concerned about building long-term wealth. And I see that as the antithesis to building long-term wealth. You see that as a destroyer of long-term wealth. You're just glad he's young and it's...
That's what I said. He said, well, I'm thinking about putting $4,000 in this. What do you think? I said, can you afford to lose it? He said, well, I don't want to lose it. I said, I didn't ask that question. I asked, can you afford to lose it? He goes, no, I can't afford to lose it. I go, well, then don't make the trade. But the reason I laugh... And my wife's like, you got to stop him from doing that. Kathy, my wife, is like, you have to stop. And I'm like, this is perfect. I'd rather him learn with $3,000 or $4,000 at the age of 22 or 23 than $40,000 or $50,000 or $400,000 at the age of 55 or 60.
Or his whole retirement.
Yeah. So anyway, but it is quite humorous to me. And he always asks me, why are you laughing?
You look at it like, because it makes no logical sense to you.
No, you don't know anything about this stock. You're just watching its movement somehow.
And
poor Tina, she's talking about China. She invested this thing in the first week in October in the S&P 500, and she used the word hope. I'm hoping that consumer confidence. I'm hoping that she used the word hope. Hope is not an investment strategy. Hope is not an investment strategy. Playing the lottery could be an investment strategy, not one that we would recommend. But hope most certainly isn't. The problem with that, Scott, is she doesn't know what's good or bad. But the index annuities most certainly were bad.
Gosh. Well, we're getting...
Scott, before we go to a break, you had a little article in Kiplinger's, which you write for, number of times a year?
Yeah.
How often do you write for Kiplinger's?
I think, I don't know, half a dozen or so.
So this one is called...
I submit them to a few different places, and I think Kiplinger's about 5 or 6 times a year.
And CNBC.com, you're on, I see that occasionally.
So this article is called Based on History, Wealthy Should Take Social Security as Soon as Possible. So based on history, if you're wealthy, you should take Social Security as soon as possible. And
you know, it's funny. I've written about this a few times. I actually got a little bit of, not kickback from the editor, but it's funny because I'm pretty opinionated. We share the same opinion on this.
Yeah.
It's a good article. I think it's your point. Go to our...
Well, and why should wealthy take the money sooner? Because who do they tax? People with money.
If they have to reduce benefit, who are they coming after?
Who's it going
to
come after? People that...
Don't really need it.
Yes.
Needs-based.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
And
right.
Actually, so I just read a great opinion piece in the New York Times this couple weeks ago where they talked about the fact that the people that go on Social Security in their 60s versus waiting until older age have lower economic means, education, and typically work more manual jobs.
All right. HansonMcLean.com. You'll get that article. We're taking a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Before we head back to the calls, 1-888-2-HANSON, by the way. A year ago, roughly, we had quite a few calls on Bitcoin.
In fact, we had we talked about the dangers of Bitcoin, and there was a Bitcoin user group organization of Bitcoin investors that wanted to publicly
debate me.
Debate
us.
About how we were wrong about Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's right. You wanted to.
And we didn't even, it's like, we're not going to debate this because these are opinions that are our opinions. And you could stand in the room and scream at someone, yes, no, yes, no. But at the end, it will only be proven by the markets. And we saw Bitcoin as nothing other than the tulip craze.
Well, the price that was shooting up to. I mean, look, don't confuse Bitcoin with the underlying technology.
Blockchain.
Because I've had people tell me why Bitcoin's so great, and they make the argument based on blockchain technology. I don't understand much about technology. It's a miracle that my iPhone works. I don't know how it works. I don't know how television works. I just know how it applies to my life.
And when we talk
I understand enough about Bitcoin to see the application of Bitcoin in business transaction and in security.
Yeah, but when we talk about Bitcoin, what we're really talking about in the broader sense is cryptocurrencies.
Cryptocurrencies.
Because when we first
started... even the initial coin offerings, which could be a whole other story entirely.
That's a completely different thing, the initial
but
coin offerings.
But Ethereum and Bitcoin or what are the evidence? Here's the reality. Last November, December, when they hit its peak in 2017... the market value of the cryptocurrencies out there was about $800 billion. Almost $1 trillion that's what they were valued at. Today, it's roughly $100 billion. Over $600 billion has been wiped away from investors, speculators, what they call, in cryptocurrencies.
A value.
Value. That's real value if you go and buy this thing. Because what the only thing that...
Well, that propped it up. Was other people propping it up.
Doesn't produce anything.
Nothing.
Doesn't provide interest on its own.
Nope.
Doesn't provide rent.
Nope. You can't make jewelry out of it like gold. It has no industrial applications.
Nope.
None.
You can't even wear the coin around your chain.
Nothing. So, this is why it kind of reminded us of the tulip craze.
And look, and it's not over. Maybe it'll pop back up.
Highly likely.
And maybe pets.com might come out of the. Maybe pets.com might come out of
highly
the.
Highly unlikely. Yes.
Highly unlikely.
Not to say the and the blockchain is here.
Oh, the blockchain. We might end up using. We vote on some blockchain technology where that's how we will vote in the future because of the way it is structured.
Yeah.
It is just right. The way it works makes sense, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the products that are derived used on the technology will mean anything.
That's right.
No more than the .com craze said just because they're internet related means it's successful.
It's a good business. That's right.
Correct.
There's plenty of .com companies that went bust. There's plenty of online companies that have gone bust every day.
There's
an online retailer that goes bust.
Just because you attach yourself to some technology doesn't make you profitable or a viable.
Well, let's take some call after that good note. So hopefully you didn't buy Bitcoin a year ago. Hopefully you didn't.
Please.
1-888-2-Hanson is the number to join Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
And don't buy it now because it's down.
That's right. This isn't one of these areas like as long as you're broadly diversified amongst cryptocurrencies, you're going to be fine.
No.
1-888-2-Hanson to be part of our program. Let's start off in the Bay Area with Jim. Jim, you're with Hanson McClain.
Hi there.
Hi, Jim.
Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
Got a couple of quick questions. I am hopefully about to start a new job and am thinking of taking the option of starting a Roth 401k, given that I'm 58 and I already have $200,000 in a traditional 401k from my previous job, and I'm making about $90,000 a year.
Are you married?
No.
Are you going to maximize the contributions?
I'm going to do my best.
Do you ever plan on leaving the state of California?
Not really.
Didn't sound like it. Yeah.
But I am going to leave I'm probably going to leave the Bay Area.
Okay. Yeah, because you can sell your house for $1 million and go somewhere else. And
Yeah.
Well, actually, I could sell my house for about $1.453 million.
Okay, and just for the people who listen in other areas, San Mateo, you're partway down the peninsula, kind of between, not too far from the San Francisco airport, right?
Yep, about 10 miles south.
Okay, 10 miles south of the SFO, between San Francisco and San Jose, right? And how big is your house?
Well, I actually rent a condominium here. For dirt cheap, I got it for a song and I'm staying put. However, I do have a rental house that I previously rented in San Francisco.
Okay, so your house is in San Francisco. So that all my setup to this thing, forget about it.
Yeah.
All right, your house is in San Francisco.
So yeah, it's not a bad idea at all to fund the Roth.
Okay.
Not a bad idea at all. It allows some tax diversification, which will be important when you go to take the withdrawals.
Yeah, because we find sometimes someone's retired and they're like, hey, I need $35,000. I'm buying a new car. What's best to get it? And if all their savings is tied up in, say, a 401k or an IRA, now there's tax. We have tax implications to deal with. It's like, well, how are we going to fund this properly, et cetera? And if you have someone a Roth, at least you have more options of here's where you can draw from. In a perfect world, you hit retirement and you've got a good chunk in tax-deferred vehicles, your 401k and IRA. You have a good chunk in Roth. And you've got a good chunk in some outside assets. You'd mentioned real estate investment you've got. Perhaps you've got some brokerage accounts or some mutual funds or stocks you've held for years. So you've got different – they all have different tax treatments. So when you have need for either monthly income or from some sort of withdrawal, you've got a variety of different options to choose from. And it gives you a lot of control tax-wise.
Exactly. I do have a second part.
Okay.
Second question for you. And this is kind of wild and open-ended. But if you were to suddenly get a $250,000 inheritance shortly, what would you do with it?
Do you owe anyone any money? Do you owe money on that house in San Francisco?
I do. There's about $500,000 left on the mortgage.
And you plan on selling it, though, in the next few years?
No, I plan on keeping it. That's my retirement income. Yeah, it's currently rented out. And have a very good, very stable tenant in there who I think actually wants to buy it from me eventually.
And you're renting a condo right now for dirt cheap, you said?
Yes. It should actually rent for about twice what I'm paying for in rent.
Right. Don't tell anyone that.
I won't tell anyone that.
What would I do? I'd probably just put it in a...
So you've got a couple hundred thousand in your 401k. Do you have other savings?
Not really, just a pittance.
And your mortgage on your San Francisco home, is that the fixed rate mortgage?
Yeah, I got it down to 3.5%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd put it in a tax-efficient portfolio.
Yeah, if it were me, I would say, all right, I'm going to take some. I'm going to have some earmarked for leave it in just some sort of cash-type equivalent. And then I would take some saying, I'm going to invest, and I'd be tax-efficient, like total stock market index fund, maybe a bit in total international stock fund.
Maybe, yeah, some ETFs in there, and I would.
So it's very tax-efficient. It grows mostly tax-deferred, long-term money.
Yeah, that's what I would do with it.
Okay.
I don't think I'd look at paying down. It's funny because people call about paying off their mortgage, and oftentimes we say it, but this is a mortgage on a house that you're not planning on
living.
It's
an investment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an investment.
Yeah.
So I still get tax benefits from them. Those are starting to wane. I was actually thinking I'm looking at a recession coming on here in the next 6 months or so, and I was thinking that, you know, keeping the cash, you know, in some kind of, you know, investment vehicle, and then possibly picking up another, going bargain hunting and picking up another piece of investment property.
You know, how old is this house in San Francisco?
It was built in 1951. It's a Sunstream.
Okay, and what's the rent that you get on this every year?
Every year? Well,
or monthly?
Monthly, I get $3,800.
I'm sorry, $3,800?
$3,800 or roughly
$4,000. All right. So
you're
net.
If this were me,
yeah, I know exactly what you'd do, Scott.
I would sell this and exchange it into probably four different rental homes.
That's what I would do, especially if I was looking at income in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably wouldn't do it in the state of California just because I would worry a little bit about rent control. Although it didn't pass.
And if you go back and look, I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know when a recession's coming. I know one's going to come again. And I know if you look at how fast prices have risen in the Bay Area, that is not normal. And if you look over history, if you kind of do a bell curve, we are in way, way far down on a tail as far as the rapid increase in prices. So the likelihood of that continuing statistically is so small. Can it happen? Sure.
Yeah, it could happen again.
I mean, I could flip a coin 10 times, get heads 10 times in a row too. Statistically, not very likely, but still probable.
But the reality is you could take this property and you could exchange it for three or four less expensive properties that give you a higher yield.
Much higher.
A higher yield than what you're receiving right now. So if you're getting $4,000 a month and your home is built in 1951, you look at this thing and you're like, well, after expenses, I'm probably netting $3,000 after property taxes and insurance. I'm probably netting $3,000 on it.
Yeah, roughly.
And upkeep on there. So my yield now is $36,000 a year on a property that's worth $1.5 million. So your yield on this is about 2.5%.
So you are betting that home's going to continue rapid price appreciation.
Where you could take that property and forget about where it's at, just view it as another widget.
And don't be more concerned. If you're at this stage, I'd be more concerned with income than appreciation on it.
And you could exchange it for three, maybe four other properties in a lower priced area. That rent for
maybe in Oregon or Nevada or Texas or
Arizona that rent from $1,500 to $2,000 a month from each one of them, and you could almost double your yield. That's the way I would deal.
Or at least double your yield.
Interesting thought. Okay. Yeah.
So that's what I would noodle.
Yes. I wouldn't you just forget about what it's done in the past. Just think about what it's doing now, because it did what it did, and the chances of it doing it again are significantly less, that it will continue on this trajectory.
Yeah, that, however, there is a margin of safety. San Francisco real estate is very interesting in that.
We're not going to argue about why it's. Look, things go through cycles. I just remember back in New York in the 70s when it was pretty much bankrupt and property values were worthless. That wasn't that many years ago, right? So who knows what can happen? All we're talking about is for retirement income and statistical probabilities. If you came to us today and said, I've got $1 million to invest.
And we said, go buy this house in San Francisco.
Get a $500,000 mortgage on it. You would think we're out of our mind.
Right?
Probably.
You would say, what's my yield on this? And we'd say 2.5%. Look at this, Jim. And you'd say, you're an idiot, Scott and Pat.
Why would you recommend this?
And
I could go buy these other rentals, get me twice as much income. I'm about to retire, you idiots. And you'd go say, I'm finding another financial advisor.
All right.
Okay.
But sometimes that's the way to look at things. Instead of looking at what you currently own, step back and say, if this was my net worth, would I position my financial life like this?
Mm-hmm.
And then if the answer is no, then, of course, you have to look at tax consideration stuff. The beautiful thing about real estate is you can still do a 1031 tax-free exchange.
I would run that around. I would take a look at that.
All right.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Good luck to you, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. I was talking to a friend a couple weeks ago. They've got a condo in Marin County, and they said their condo next door had just sold. It's a condo. It's a... I think it's like a two, it's basically two bedroom, like 2.5 bedroom, couple bath, nothing fancy in Marin County, which is a nice area north of San Francisco. And they said a family was moving out from Pennsylvania, moving into it. $1.2 million for this condo in Marin County, nothing fancy.
Wow.
And I thought, can you imagine
moving from
you get some great job in the Bay Area, you're living in Pennsylvania, like, we're going to California, right? You got to, like, $1.2 million. You get a condo.
Yep.
No view. Not like a view. Not like one of the big skyscraper.
No. Just a condo. Like in Pennsylvania, it'd be like 70 grand.
Yeah, correct. No, I'm not. Right? Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really interesting.
So remember, the asset doesn't know you own it. You should not have an attachment to anything that can't love you back. Don't love anything that can't love you back. So when you go through this thinking process about either selling the stock, do I own this? Am I overweighted? Just step back and ask yourself, if I had this money in cash, would I do this today? Would I buy this asset today? And if the answer is no, then you shouldn't own it. That's as simple as that.
Yeah. Assuming you can unwind it without big tax.
Huge tax implications. But even then, sometimes you're better off just taking the tax hit.
Yeah, you really are. And continuing at 1-888-2-HANSEN, let's go to Roseville, California. Mike, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, thanks. Hey, I've been listening to your show, and I've been listening to these pension fund questions regarding California. But one thing I'd like you guys to comment on is the viability of the CalPERS pension fund. My understanding, it has close to $1 trillion of unfunded liabilities. And if how those are going to be met in the long term?
Well, I believe the $1 trillion, I think that number comes from a Stanford study that it was all of the California's state and municipalities, about $1 trillion in unfunded liabilities. Well,
so let's break down actually what that means, CalPERS, right? So if you think of CalPERS, California Public Employee Retirement System, it is actually a contractor to many municipalities, so water districts, fire districts,
right?
Yeah. Cities, counties, the whole bit, and then state workers themselves. So that unfunded liability, there are many. So you can't throw them all in the same pot because each municipality will have a different liability, either funded, fully That's funded, true. Or unfunded, right? And some are addressing it more aggressively than others. So the question, I guess, is what's the long-term ramifications of this?
And is your concern as an employee expecting a pension?
No, I'm not. I'm semi-retired and well off. I was privately employed. My question is, like, you had Stockton stop their pension contribution to the CalPERS system for a while because the town was in
bankruptcy,
de facto state of default. And it just seems like the number, the gross number of obligations of the pensions being paid out are increasing.
Yes.
And net wealth of California, I think, if you match that with increasing tax rates, you're going to see the net wealth of California somewhat leave the state.
Yep.
And I just need your opinion.
Totally agree.
Completely agree.
And thus far, they've been able to mitigate it through increased taxes, right? So if you think about it, a couple of years ago, California's voted in to keep the surtax on people with the high income at, it's was 13.3% for the, they voted it in.
Yeah.
Sacramento just voted in a 1%, a 1 cent sales tax increase, which a large part of that's going to go to fund pensions. But the challenge is at some point in time, services are going to get cut and people are going to be like, why do I need to live here? Why don't I just go to somewhere that's growing instead of, that doesn't have all these obligations from my future generation?
Correct. And the money that can,
right, I know.
Mike, you know as well as I, that the money that leaves is the money, the people with the most money are the most mobile in terms of leaving.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So if you're making $500,000 a year, let's say you're making $300,000 a year, and you decide to move to Nevada or Washington State or Texas, it's the equivalent of getting a free house to move there.
That is correct.
Exactly.
It's this, because the amount that you're paying in taxes, you can make towards a mortgage
that
payment.
Is correct.
It's like
last week I talked to a friend of mine, moved to Houston.
Wouldn't be my first choice, but good for him.
I hadn't talked to him in a couple months. I mean, not obviously not a close friend because we would have had the discussion. I knew he was looking for different work. He's early 50s, executive, and youngest kid just went off to college.
So Mike
chose to out of the state.
Mike, it is not good. And right now, it's just a big game of kick the can.
It's kick the can. I think the bigger concern is what happens when we have the next what happens when technology goes through a recession? Every industry does. It will as well at some point in time have a recession. Then what's our state looking like? And it'll be really interesting.
Well, let me ask you this, because they have a federal statute. I think it was passed in 2015, and I think they went into Tennessee and maybe Vermont and actually reduced the state pension allotment to each individual who had retired. Is that a possibility in the state of California?
It's against the law right now. It's against the law.
It's law right now?
Yeah, it's against the law.
Right now.
It's against the law right now to change any pension benefit that has been promised from the first date of employment.
Which is different from private enterprise.
From the first date of employment. Not accrued benefit, but the pension promise from the first date of employment.
I see. So what will
law needs to change.
But if they have a shortfall, will they just raise state tax?
Well, it depends, right? In the state of California, the raised state taxes. In the you're calling from Roseville in the county of Placer, where you live. Maybe it's that they start pulling back on benefits. Maybe the county of Placer doesn't take care of the roads as much, and maybe law enforcement, the sheriff's department, takes a cut. Or that's where you're seeing
it. That's what it's been so far.
That's what it's been
That's
so
what's
far.
Been happening.
I see.
And so you saw this. Gas tax pass in the state of California, that was passed by the legislature and then voted on to pretend that that isn't somehow tied to this pension, right? They're saying we need this money. Yeah.
They need the money because of unfunded pension.
Because they need the money to fix the roads. Well, that's right. And the reason is because you've got this. More and more of your budget is going to this unfunded pension liability. And by the way, listen, if you work at CalPERS, God bless you. If you work for a municipality and you get the pension, it's not your fault that the government made these promises to you. There's a lawsuit right now.
Yeah.
There's a lawsuit pending right now against what they call buying airtime. And this was kind of a boondoggle that was pushed through in the year 2000.
We recommended many of our clients and our radio program. If you can do it,
they stopped it. They stopped it. Now there is a group that is suing the state of California to reinstate the airtime.
That's ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous.
There should be a lawsuit the other way around. They shouldn't have allowed that.
The last 2 years.
No. That's pension spiking. When they load up the last 2 years, that's called pension spiking. They've pretty much fixed that.
I think a bigger and more interesting thing, Mike, is I have a feeling you don't have a government pension. But it's people.
I'm not in a position where I need a pension. Well, my wife. Has
but I think pension. I think what'll be more interesting as time goes on, the percentage of people that are not receiving pensions, and like, wait a minute, my fire department doesn't have enough people. My police department doesn't have enough people. I've got all these issues, and your pension's how big? I mean, I think those are the issues. I think not just in pension, frankly. You look at wealthy retirees and poor retirees, that gap continues to grow.
Right.
That creates some political instability as well. But anyyway, these are all just, our goal is as financial advisors to help people navigate through these things. And frankly, if you're a 50-year-old retiree as a fire department.
Good for you. We have lots and lots of those clients.
Absolutely. But you might want to have something in place in case you're 75 years old and the pensions get cut.
We've actually counseled people that were safety workers to leave at age 50 and actually go to a different municipality and start their pension all over again because it was better for them. And they're like, well, I'm not at 80 or 90% of pension. And you go, yeah, I understand that. But if you go and you leave what you got, you start another one, you're overall net worth.
Well, our job as financial advisors is help the individual.
Yeah, correct. We don't work for the government. We work for the client. In our opinion as to whether it's right or wrong.
You want to reduce taxes as much as possible and all those other kind of government benefits, right? So, well, we are out of time for this week's program, unfortunately. But if you haven't spent some time at HansenMcLane.com, we've got a number of different things. We've got some online tutorials. These are typically 20 to 25 minutes in length, and they'll cover four important topics related to money and retirement. So they're just an easy way to do things. Hanson McLane has a lot of different live events, live workshops. We don't between now and Christmas.
No.
We'll have some more in the beginning of the year, so keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, particularly if you have some time over the holidays and you want to increase some of your
knowledge of financial.
From our view of retirement and our view of the financial world. That's kind of what you're going to get. That's exactly what you're going to get. So anyway, certainly enjoyed being with you this weekend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLane Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.